Welcome to the Inner Bottom Line, the place where we tackle ethical dilemmas and personal choices. I'm your host, Olive Gallagher, and I'm delighted to be back with you again. So thanks for joining us. First, some housekeeping. I want to make sure to give you our call-in number so you can reach out to me with your personal dilemmas or questions or comments. We welcome them all, and if you wish to remain anonymous, well, that's fine too. So why don't you make a note of this number now? It's 929-477-3854. And again, that's 929-477-4854. That's during the live show. During the podcast, of course, you won't be able to reach me directly, but you will be able to email me at any time. And you can reach me at theinnerbottomline@gmail.com. Again, that's theinnerbottomline@gmail.com. Well, let's begin. It's been another one of those OMG, where do we begin weeks? Let's start with three little words: power, control, and fear. Let's take fear, control, power first. What makes anyone small, selfish, inward turned, maniacal? What makes anyone use fear to take control of any situation so they can feel powerful, so that they can feel big and everyone else feels small? It's what every dictator in history has done, including Hitler. When a person is intensely insecure, everything has to be about them. They have to endlessly receive adulation and attention, and they will try to control any and every situation in order to feel powerful and important and big. Now, that's fear, control, power. But when a person is secure in their self-identity, in their self-awareness, they have no need to try and control anything else around them. They're comfortable in their own skin, and they don't need to impress or manipulate anyone in order to get attention. So for them, the three words line up as power, control, and fear. They don't have to be afraid because they feel secure in what they are and what they stand for. If we take a look at this week's events and ponder how those three little words apply, it's easy to see the way in which power has been used over and over and over again, and once again this past week, destructively, and where personal accountability was trampled upon by those in control, at least for the moment. And that prompts another hefty question I wanted to turn our attention to. So let me ask you, what's a life worth? With the events of the last week, particularly the shocking disappearance and probable gruesome murder of journalist Jamal Khashoggi, I was prompted once again to question, what's a life worth? What's yours worth or mine? Every year on the award shows, there's always a segment called Memoriam, a usually tasteful, somber, and often touching moment when famous faces and names flash across the screen in brief mentions and tributes to their lives and work. While it's generally moving, with some faces meriting a genuine sense of loss and appreciation, it's over in a few minutes, and then the festivities return to all the usual and often cliched pomp and circumstance of rewarding and applauding the latest shows or films. However, at the same time, around the world, millions of other lives are ending, and we never know of them, hear about them, note them. Some lives die in the streets or shelters. Some are taken in violent crime. Some end in hospitals, huts, forests, or jungles, or at home with a few loved ones gathered, others alone with no one to whisper a final goodbye. And sometimes neighborhoods or towns or cities mourn along with the family and loved ones. In the end, does that matter? Is one life worth more than another based on the numbers who mourn, or the headlines or fanfare that's made? Did one life stand for more, create more, love more, give more, mean more? I've been asked many times over the past 30 years if things today, events today, are worse than they've ever been before. And right now, I'm tempted to say yes, at least in America, to my memory. I was asked that question the other night at an event I attended where my book was being presented as a prize. Whenever I am asked that question, my brain always rushes past a ready yes to a number of past images and memories, none of which are pleasant or assuring, but are sadly enlightening and useful. Moments when I recall the loss of human lives indentured to build pyramids, enlisted to fight in the Crusades or the Inquisition, or captured to become the bodies thrown to the lions in the Colosseum or into the ovens at Auschwitz. Just the thought of any one of those circumstances makes my skin crawl and my heart sink. It was in my book that I first described our species as scavenger-like, never satisfied with what we have, always wanting, needing, searching for more and more and more, gobbling everything and everyone up in our way to get to the top of the mountain, to reach the top of the heap, to own the riches this planet has offered us so generously, so endlessly, so selflessly for millennia. A planet that is growing more and more out of kilter. All the signs today, so simple that even a child can understand them, point to a globe that is growing tired and depleted and angry, and it's serious risk. And yet, we still have deniers among us who decry the very real and science-based concerns about global warming or depletion of ozone, because to do so would mean change. And change requires giving up things we want more. Access to ocean shores. Access to oil beneath the surface. Translated into terms we all are too familiar with, a loss of money in the short term. So to hell with worrying about polluting rivers or land for the long term. To hell with caring about plastic or garbage in our seas. To hell with destroying habitats other species depend upon. It's not our problem at present. Let someone else down the line worry about it. And that brings me right back again to ask the question and to seek an answer. What's a life worth? To you? To me? What's my life worth? Anyone other than a few close friends or a child care when I've taken my last breath? What about you? We'll be right back.
From the sky, what is time? Is it the air we breathe, or the wings that teach a newborn bird to fly? I don't know. Will we change? Will we grow? eternity in heaven, or just a hope for peace on earth. Weather time gone in the blink of an eye, but with every blink a bird. It's time to care. It's not too late. Don't despair.
Welcome back to The Inner Bottom Line. I'm your host, Olive Gallagher, and that was the amazing Billy Porter singing live one of my favorite songs, Time, as I mentioned in the show last week. I tend to choose songs for a reason, not just as an accident. So usually in the lyric or in the mood, I try to find a sense of continuity between what I'm saying and what I'm thinking and what the songs express for me so much better than I could ever say. So anyhow, welcome back. Our call-in number is 929-477-3854 for those of you who are listening live. And of course, if you call in and you want to speak on the air to me, you can, or you can ask me a question on in our studio room and not be on the air, and it'll be all private and anonymous. It's up to you. It's your choice. Or you can email me with your questions or comments at theinnerbottomline@gmail.com, and I look forward to hearing from you. I love getting your questions. Send me your ethical dilemmas, too. I wrote The Inner Bottom Line as a national syndicated column for over 20 years, and it was based really on Q&A. It was based on people writing or calling me or stopping me in the supermarket and saying, I got a problem with my husband or with my best friend or my brother-in-law or in the office or with a colleague or coworker or whatever. And I guess I've been asked pretty much everything, although I don't know, I keep getting surprised. It just is the endless wonderment of life. So let's go back again, if we could, to I just got an email from someone asking me to continue on with my thoughts on what a life is worth. So let's go on with that. Again, I'll ask the question, what's a life worth? Here's a thought. If you or I were taken prisoner in another country, or even in this one, God forbid, would anyone fight to free us? Would anyone save us? Protect us? stand up and say, no, you cannot do that. You cannot do that to an American. We take for granted that we have leaders who care, who would go to the wall for us. But in reality, moments like this remind us that it all depends, doesn't it, on any number of things, especially how famous we are, what our ethnic or religious background is, who our parents were, where our family came from, how much money we have, or how much money is at stake in what our lives at that moment have become caught up in, a mere transaction, a trade, a barter between power brokers whose only concern is the enrichment of their own coffers, while pointing fingers at each other and others to take the blame so they can claim plausible deniability. I love that phrase, plausible deniability. My work is all about personal accountability, not plausible deniability, finding some excuse that people will find sort of credible. Well, America has always taken the public-facing position that we never pay a ransom for hostages. That leaves a very wide swath of other circumstances where we might find ourselves in trouble and need our country to care, to object, to make a public statement that terrorism or violence against any American is never tolerated, accepted, acquiesced to. Have we become so callous, so money-driven, so base and willing to cheat and lie and deceive and manipulate that we're numb to what has apparently just been done? All in the name of power by a bully prince leader who has been known before to kill at will whenever anyone dares to dissent or disagree? The news of this brutal act against Jamal Khashoggi was greeted for the past week by the very predictable and obscene behavior of our current president, who did nothing, said nothing of note. He shrugged the incident off after a few days of nothing with, well, we don't know much yet, to now, yesterday. Well, maybe something happened, but the Saudi leader didn't know, had nothing to do with it. Rogue killers. Seriously? Any intelligence professional will tell you that the moment something, anything like this happens and becomes known to anyone, anywhere in the world, the president is alerted, period. Our intelligence network is among the best. And yet, we get this from this pathetic excuse of a grown-up. No public statement of objection or horror. No threat of sanctions or punitive action. Neither he nor the White House has expressed an outcry of moral repudiation for these actions against a permanent American resident. No condemnation of this most unspeakable act, nor any assertion of any kind of the United States' commitment to human rights. Human rights, folks, and justice, and respect, and protection of the Fourth Estate. Nothing by this egomaniacal, greedy snake oil salesman, so unfit to lead anything, much less this country, whose name shall not be spoken here, ever, just like Voldemort. This president himself has made threats against journalists for years, though he's used them for years to his benefit whenever it was useful. Now, with his continued bashing of what he has dubbed the enemy of the people, he's provided a green light to other like-minded authoritarians to follow suit against the Fourth Estate, a profession of which I have been a proud member for many years. So I take this very personally. Yes. A body of esteemed, talented, and courageous writers and columnists and editors and copywriters and research folks whose very existence and duty, according to the First Amendment, is to speak truth to power and to pour light into dark corners so that all who choose to see can see. Speak truth to power. That statement is printed on the back of my business card. The Inner Bottom Line. I'm your host, Olive Gallagher, and I got an email while I was listening to Made in Manhattan, the soundtrack, and I hope you were enjoying that, a little lighter note. And yes, this is really not for me a political statement. This is an ethical statement. As an ethicist, I have a responsibility to speak up when I see the four core ethical values anywhere, at any time, by anyone being trampled on or destroyed. Those four core ethical values are: number one, honesty; number two, respect; number three, fairness; and number four, integrity. And everything about this does not pass the smell test. By the way, the First Amendment, in case anyone needs refreshment, we all can use that refreshment, is simply defined as such. It's a guarantee of the rights of free expression and action that are fundamental to democratic government. These rights include freedom of assembly, freedom of the press, freedom of religion, and freedom of speech. So just imagine your life if one of those gets taken away. And so no one has to have fallen off the turnip truck miles ago not to know that when Mr. Khashoggi entered the Saudi embassy in Istanbul and didn't come back out as expected by his fiance, that something untoward had happened and that our intelligence services would have picked up this chatter and instantly alerted the White House that something was amiss? It's been clear for 2 years that Voldemort and his prince-in-law have created intimate ties with the Saudi prince. What's that all about, you ask? Simple. What is everything this person does? Money. It's about money. Simple. Clear. And let me be very clear here. Their money. Not yours, not mine, not ours. Their money. I cannot stress that point enough. This is not about America's interests or concerns. This is not about protecting American ideals or ideas or values or even its people. And it's certainly not about protecting anyone who doesn't look like him, sound like him, or come from an ethnic background or culture like his. It's about loans and properties and investments and who knows what else. About matters that only concern him and his bank account, like every other affair he's had his little hands into now or in the past. His reputation has followed him for years, just like the piece of toilet paper stuck to his heel as he climbed the stairs of Air Force One the other day. So again, I ask the question, what's a life worth anyhow? How do you feel about becoming a pawn on someone else's chessboard who cares not for your value or worth? Is this the kind of leadership we want? Is this what we want our country to stand for? I'm not being overly dramatic. I've never felt as compelled to speak up and out as I do today. And I know I am not alone. Millions of my fellow Americans are feeling as I do. So how about you? You have the chance to raise your voice up and be heard on November 6th, a few short weeks away. Don't let that chance to prove your worth be wasted. All of our lives depend on the outcome. And we'll be right back with a slightly lighter subject, so don't go away. Thank you.
sail away and find serenity. Oh, the candles can do miracles. Just you wait and see, then you believe me. Sailing, take me away to where I was always needed to be.
Welcome back to The Inner Bottom Line. I'm your host, Olive Gallagher, and that always does take me away to being on an ocean with sunlight and wind in my hair, and that felt good. I hope you enjoyed it. We needed to lighten things up a little bit. So now, some more questions. By the way, in case you want to call in, the number, call-in number is 929-477-3854, and you can email me as you are doing. Thank you so much for your messages. I am so appreciating them, and I'm so happy to hear from you. You can reach me at theinnerbottomline@gmail.com at any time. So, here's a question. Do your goals determine the choices you make? Or do your values determine your choices? I know it prompts more thought, more reflection, more questions. The Inner Bottom Line will do that to you. I know. You may recall that I mentioned in passing at the top of the show that I was invited last week to attend an event of business entrepreneurs by a colleague who had read my book and had decided to raffle a copy of it off that evening. She was particularly intrigued with the fact that I had had the book released with two covers and asked me to make a few comments about that after I was introduced. After I spoke about the choices I had made regarding the covers, and I'll deal with that in another show, I was approached by someone who confided to me that she had found that her goals determined the choices she had made in the past. And she asked me, what did I think of that? I pondered it for a moment and then said, actually, on the Inner Bottom Line, it works a bit differently. On the Inner Bottom Line, it's your values that determine the choices you make, that you need to first know what matters most to you and then make choices that protect and respect those values. She responded by saying that she needed to consider all of that further and asked to purchase a copy of my book. And all the way home, her words kept rolling around in my head. Her goals had determined the choices she had made. And it hit me in that moment that those words implied, even summed up, so much of what seems off, seems so wrong with this culture in this moment in time, that this was one of the key issues that's bringing clients into my private practice more than ever. It even describes so much of what's going on in this White House, this country, today. Consider this. Goals are helpful. They are great to have, to inspire, to propel. Aiming for something beyond ourselves or our present moment can be a healthy part of purpose, of ambition, of drive. But if our goals determine the choices we make rather than our values, then we're simply being driven to attain that goal every moment, every day, come what may. The hell with what values might fall by the wayside, get kicked to the curb, or what people we might hurt or neglect, offend, or even lose. If anything stands in our way to reaching that goal, well, too bad. When our goals determine our choices, are we overlooking all of the values, the things we personally need to be our best every day, to take care of ourselves so we can go out in this world and give it our best, our personal best, our all every morning, and in that way achieve goals that respect and honor who we are and what we stand for, rather than the other way around? For example, you decide that you don't care that much about what profession or job or path in life you decide to have, to take at this moment. You only care about finding something, anything, that offers you the salary or commission you desire. And you are certain, you decide, that if you're able to make that much money, you'll be happy, satisfied, pleased, because it will then allow you to purchase all the things and the lifestyle you want. And that, in turn, will attract others to you in intimate or other relationships. In other words, what you have will be the attraction, not who you are. So whatever you have to give up, to sacrifice, to forget about, to overlook, to ignore, well, that's okay. It will all be worth it in the end. You and I know this is a typical scenario. And in some distorted way, it's the old American dream. A chicken in every pot. A two-car garage. Garages today that, for the most part, are often not used to park two cars inside anymore, but rather to hold the overflow of stuff that won't fit inside the house. And what follows is also typical, but today can often be deceptive, even predictably destructive. You get that job, and you make that money. You buy your dream house and fill it with all the things you ever wanted. And you ignore all of the warning signs in your gut, your actual gut, on your very own inner bottom line. And then you find yourself somewhere down the road feeling endlessly stressed, constantly empty, frustrated, irritable, even inexplicably angry, wanting and still hungry for more and more, but somehow nothing fills you up. You reach a point where you're dissatisfied, perhaps with your marriage or partner, or the exhaustion from the hours spent commuting or traveling, and the traffic which gets worse and worse, or your colleagues at work who continually frustrate you with their own boredom or ineptitude, or the work itself, which isn't fulfilling or challenging or exciting. The list goes on. And perhaps you've discovered that alcohol or drugs or food or sex or gambling or shopping and going out and buying more stuff doesn't ease the stress anymore like it used to for a short while, until another fix was needed. Yet, you don't choose to make any changes or leave the job because, after all, getting the money. And that makes it all worthwhile, doesn't it? We'll be right back. Never for real. Welcome back to The Inner Bottom Line. That was Bill Gable singing one of my favorite songs, Hive Trapeze, and a little bit you'll see why I chose that song. But before I go on, I don't want to overlook taking this opportunity to wish some very, very dear friends and loved ones some happy birthdays. It's a very big happy birthday time for me. I have a lot of Libras in my life. This past Sunday, the 14th, a very, very dear friend, Gloria, had a very big birthday. So, Gloria, I send you my love. My daughter has a big birthday coming up. They're all big when it's your child, this Friday on the 19th. So, darling, happy birthday. I look forward to seeing you. Another dear, dear friend in Santa Fe, Andrea, has a birthday on the 22nd. Andrea, I miss you every day and think of you every day. And my beloved Jonathan, who's out of the country right now, his birthday's on the 23rd. Welcome back safely, honey, and sending you birthday wishes. Okay, housekeeping. Also, I want to say thank you to a colleague of mine, Oscar, who called me yesterday and asked for help. And that's always a wonderful thing to be able to reach out and give someone an assist. So, Oscar, thanks for thinking of me and thanks for calling. Okay, back to where we were. We were talking about not wanting to make any changes, even though, you know, things aren't working out. So let's take a look at that word that so many of us avoid until it hurts. Change. Change can be very scary, can it? Yeah. It can also be utterly freeing and exhilarating. But for too many of us, the unknown and the fear of it can be crippling. This is the point at which many of my clients arrive at my door. I call it break point, when your psychic shoes have started to really pinch, when something has to change. But what? On the inner bottom line, I like to think of it as backing up the truck to the basic DNA building blocks of choices and values. When you choose to sit down and figure out what you value most, when you do that, everything will change. How? That's simple. By writing down a top 10 list of values you cannot and will not compromise for anything. And I mean for anything. And I promise you, the list of things you need to identify today will not look anything like the list you might have made at 18 or even 25 or 40 or so on. So what's on your list? What do you have to have around you in your life in order to breathe, to exist, to feel a sense of wholeness, completeness, serenity, peace? When you can feel that, you can take on any goal you choose. But it's a goal that has to allow for and respect the importance of those values. I call this playing with a full deck, a concept that's a chapter in my book, and one we'll return to time and time again as it's at the heart of life on the inner bottom line. For instance, I realized halfway through my life that the very existence in a place of quiet, of true peace, free from traffic and people noises, was essential in order for me to be able to be creative in any way, to dream, to imagine, to put down on paper or create on a piano or in my head the words or music or thoughts or ideas or concepts or plans I have endlessly rolling around in my head. I can't think, literally, if I'm subjected to noise. It makes me nervous, unable to focus. I spent a lot of my earlier years apologizing for being this way. I was bullied and ostracized and criticized and insulted for being this way, told something was wrong with me. Finally, somewhere in my late 40s, after I had been lecturing on the inner bottom line for a while, my own words, my own new philosophy began to sink in. I sought serenity, peace, alignment, harmony. As a lifelong musician, I was built to seek harmony, not dissonance. And I was born with heightened senses. That I had always known, but I didn't understand the impact on my life. I could hear things, feel things, sense things, smell things that others couldn't. And it was at that moment that I stopped apologizing and began paying attention to what I needed to do to protect and provide myself with what I needed in order to survive my life with contentment, joy, freedom, autonomy. And so I began to walk my talk. All the initial intuitive things I had thought comprised the content and context of the inner bottom line became organic to me personally. And it freed me. I realized that this is who I am, how I'm built. This is my own physiognomy. This is what I essentially needed. My must-have-to-survive list. My playing with a full deck current inventory. And if I wanted to avoid feeling tense, irritable, anxious, nervous, I would need to find places to live, a life I could create, where I could have a large portion of time spent in real quiet and peace. There was no longer any need to apologize for seeking contentment. But there's a price for every choice we make. For me, that meant a tangible price to finding peace, quiet, solitude, safety. It meant paying higher rents or mortgage fees to find homes more secluded in quiet areas or towns rather than in the heart of a city. It meant giving up access to bustle and excitement, but finding birdsong and serenity. And the list continues on today. If you've ever watched any of the House Hunter segments on HGTV, one of the common threads that runs through nearly every episode is the different requirements of two people who live together. It's amazing. One seeks the country in peace, the other one city center and all the bustle. In that quest, sometimes their relationship appears fractious and you wonder, how are they staying together? And other times, they're harmonious and they're seeking compromise and support for one another. This is a constant, common push and pull in our lives and relationships today. So, what have you chosen? And if you know way down deep that it isn't working for you, what would you choose to change? And why haven't you made that change yet? What's holding you back? How long can you carry on this way? How long do you propose living a life that isn't providing you with what you know you essentially need? What price will that carry? Is that standing up for who you are and what you want your legacy to be less important than what title you have or how much you earn or possess? When people speak of you, what do they say? Which obit would you choose? That you were a caring, giving person who had great integrity and touched the lives of others, or that you were very successful in business and built an empire? Or somewhere in between. So let's cut it down to simply this. If you could make a change right now, what would it be? What would you choose to let go of and to reach out for? And what would you leave behind? Remember, honesty starts with telling ourselves on our own inner bottom line the whole truth and nothing but the truth. Think of it this way. Remember the song I played before, High Trapeze? You can't grab a hold of something new if you're holding on to something old, even with one hand. That's like being on a trapeze and thinking you can grab the one coming at you and still hold on to the one upon which you're perched. Doesn't work that way. There's going to be a split-second moment when you've got to let go with both hands and hang suspended in midair before you connect with the one heading your way. And that challenge can be both incredibly terrifying, but also amazingly breathtaking. They say we get the world we deserve. We have the chance every day to get up and do it differently on the inner bottom line, to look inside a kaleidoscope and shift one tiny piece, making the entire picture change. We have the chance in several weeks to speak up, to find our voice and raise it with courage and volume and clarity, to shift one key piece in the kaleidoscope of democracy. Don't let this chance go by. Stand up. Vote. Make your voice heard. Shift one crystal piece. At this moment, it's the best of what we have. Freedom to speak before it's too late to say anything at all, before the price we will have to pay will be too high. Next week, I'm delighted to remind you that my guest will be Peter Toll, who is involved with the Democratic Party in Oregon, and a very, very interesting and kind man. I'm so looking forward to having a conversation, not so much about partisan politics, but about choices and values, how he and I both came to this moment in time where we've met and become colleagues, but have arrived at this moment in time with a lot of shared values, but coming from very different places. And, of course, all about the importance of speaking up and owning the freedom to your voice, which the show is all about. Thanks so much for joining me today. I look forward to seeing you again and hearing from you next week on the Inner Bottom Line. In the meantime, take good care of yourself and the ones that you love. Bye-bye.